Yeah, I mean, that you shouldn't go into this stage. No, I mean, there's a stage called Bhavanka.
Yeah.
And you know, yes, and you should be, there's always a sign, you know, before you drop it.
Okay.
I mean, that is a stage of just being, you know, that it's completely useless.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the interesting thing about practice is, we will know it after we experience something, if it's useless or not useless.
Yeah,
so, I mean, that we don't need...
There's nothing in it.
No, there's nothing in it. You know, it's just... I mean, actually, it's just disturbance. I mean, yeah. We are neither concentrated nor are we, you know... When we come out, we feel sort of, you know, yeah, well, what was that?
Yeah. And then back to breath and everything's okay. So, and then they come, it comes and takes you again because it kind of draws you.
Yeah, I mean, of course it draws you. But, you know, it is very similar to tiredness that comes.
Yes.
I mean, it's a tiredness of the kilesas who are bored. So you have to look into boredom. What is boredom? I mean, you're not interested in your object. You're not interested in the breath or you're not interested in the Buddha. That's how boredom arises. I mean, it takes over, you know. I mean, they don't come and grab us at one time, you know. I mean, that would be so easy to see. I mean, they take the first, you know, the first part of the finger, then the next part of the finger, then the, you know, then the first one finger, then the next finger, you know, and slowly, 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 and we just don't notice it. That's how they work. I mean, if they wouldn't work, you know, like magicians, you know, always. Look, what is there, you know, taking one finger. Look, what is there, taking another finger. Look, what is there? Oh, that's interesting, you know, taking a hand, you know. And so that, and in the end, we're completely lost out to them, without knowing even. You know? Only after that, you know, when we're completely lost out, we will notice. But the topics, so let me start. But the topics I was talking about the last few days, you know, in Thai, in the morning, was the first noble truth. The first noble truth of dukkha. I mean, it's amazing, this truth, you know. I mean, the four noble truths are the basic foundation of Buddhism. But we learn them. The first noble truth, it's the noble truth of dukkha. Yeah. Okay. When we translate it into English, it's called suffering and pain. Well, I don't suffer. Who suffers? Huh? Pain. Sometimes I have pain. But most of the time I don't have pain. Huh? So, I mean, the first noble truth doesn't apply. So the rest of the noble truths, forget it. Huh? I mean, think about pain, yeah? Huh? That's the first noble truth. Huh? Try to sit comfortable. I mean, you can close your eyes, you know, and just concentrate. But if you if you get the meaning that dukkha is actually a container for all unpleasant feelings, then becomes broader. I mean, boredom belongs to this container. Dukkha. Boredom is dukkha. Dissatisfaction. Not feeling at ease. That's all dukkha. I mean, when we are hungry, it's dukkha. It's a form of dukkha. Then that's normally when we eat something. When we are thirsty, it's a form of dukkha. When our stomach hurts because we have been overeating, that's dukkha. When we need to go to the toilet, that is dukkha. When we need to go to the pissoir, that's dukkha. When we need, you know, when we are tired and need to sleep, yeah, that's dukkha. I mean, and then, you know, we just look, everything that we do, the moment we shift, there must be dukkha in our heart. But we never look. I mean, that is the power of avijja. Avijja doesn't want to know these things. I mean, whatever is not for them to play around with, they don't. Avijja doesn't want to know, so he doesn't want to know this first noble truth. I mean, think about it. Why did the Lord Buddha, you know, proclaim this as a noble truth? If you translated the suffering and pain, I mean, the whole noble truth is gone. But if you translate it as, you know, not feeling at ease, being at discomfort, you know, all these things, you know, being bored. Think about, you know, when we were young, you know, this boring Sunday afternoons, you know. I mean, there wasn't anything to do. I mean, we didn't know what to do with ourselves, and I mean, it was difficult to overcome them. Nowadays, of course, because with all this industry of entertainment industry, I mean, there's no boring Sunday afternoon anymore. I mean, the internet is on 24 hours. I mean, on our TV are 300 channels or 600 channels. I mean, how can there be boredom arising? We don't see it anymore. But actually, we are bored. And that is the better we understand this first noble truth, I mean, the more we are inclined to find a way out of this dukkha. Everything that we do, if we talk to a friend, it's because of a reason of out of dukkha. If we go here and go there, it's because we have dukkha. I mean, if we just would, you know, for one day, just look at every kind of shifting that we do, every kind of activity we do, and before we do this activity, we look at our heart and feel this dukkha. I mean, we would be so amazed, you know, because we would see that all day long, I mean, there is nothing that unpleasant feelings. There is nothing, you know, that dukkha. And all the things that we do is because out of dukkha. I mean, we will know that very, very clearly the moment we go into samadhi. The moment, you know, the heart is satisfied. And the people who know samadhi, the moment when they know that the heart is satisfied, in that moment they don't want anything. Huh? I mean, that is just the opposite of it, of how we live our life. I mean, when we sit in samadhi, we don't want anything. We don't even want to get out, you know. We hear all the noises that we are constantly digesting, and we don't want them. They are so far away, I mean, they don't even bother us when we are in samadhi. But, I mean, when we are not in samadhi, and when we don't have sati, I mean, they're constantly bothering us, and they constantly make us shift, or make us do this, or do that, or do that. So the better we understand this first noble truth, the first noble truth of dukkha, I mean, the more energy it gives us, the more power it gives us to follow the other noble truth, to understand the other noble truth. What is the second noble truth? The second noble truth is the desire. I mean, the constantly wanting this or wanting that, not wanting that and not wanting this. That's the desire. Becoming somebody or not becoming something. Being in a situation or not being in a situation. The desire to. That is what creates a dukkha. I mean, the example it also is, you know, the moment we are in samadhi, there is no desire. So there can be no dukkha. I mean, it's wonderful. That's where we have our rest. I mean, that's why the Lord Buddha praised samadhi so much. He said, I mean, that's if people who going on this path, on this strenuous path to the end of dukkha, do not have, you know, the samadhi, you know, or jhanas, whatever, you know, jhanas or samadhi. You know? I mean, nobody would go this path. So it also shows us, you know, when we come to the fourth noble truth, the importance of samadhi. Because it shows us that there is something, you know, that is more satisfactory than everything that we have experienced in our life before. So our desire, you know, wanting to become this, wanting to become that, wanting to find this place or that place, but this place and that place, wherever we go, I mean, we bring ourselves there, and that's the problem. to each place, you know, where we go, you know. We pack our whole, you know, the 50 kilograms of flesh or 60 or 70 kilograms of flesh. I mean, we transport to this location, you know. And of course, you know, the citta doesn't have any weight, you know, it goes there. And all the dukkha that goes from this place to the next place, we will find there after a while. So, I mean, there's no running away from the dukkha. Wherever we go, we will meet, we will face, you know, with the citta. That is the prime mover of everything. The third noble truth is just a happy news. Ah, there's an end of dukkha. And the fourth noble truth is that what we are concentrating on when we are ordaining as monks or when we are practicing in a monastery. And that is the way that leads to the end of dukkha. And the way that leads to the end of dukkha is comprised of three columns. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Sila are the five precepts, or for the monk are the 227 precepts. Samadhi is the ability to concentrate and to develop sati. And Panya is the development of wisdom. This is the path. This is the path that leads to the end of dukkha. But we do forget, especially when we come from the West, that there are some prerequisites. Before we even can start practicing, I mean, we have to develop three virtues. The virtue of generosity, the virtue of respecting, you know, respecting our parents, respecting the teachers, respecting other people, and the virtue of gratitude. Why? Generosity, if we can't let go of material things, how can we let go of our own thoughts and ideas? It's difficult to let go of material things, but it's much more difficult to let go of ideas. So it's a training. It's a pre-training. The same thing with respect. I mean, if we cannot respect the Dhamma, if we cannot respect our parents, how can we respect ourselves? If we can't respect the teachers, how can we respect ourselves? I mean, in the West we are good, you know, finding fault with each other. But, you know, actually, you know, all the faults that we see in others are our own faults. It's just a projector. Our citta just projects on anything onto other people. I mean, if we project, you know, if there would be if the world would be just a white linen, you know, I mean, we could look at the world and see exactly the replica of our citta. Whatever is in our citta, we would see. But the world is not a white linen, you know. It has structures, it has people, it has animals. So, I mean, we project the images of our citta onto them, and most of the time what we see is ourselves. The difficulties, you know, I mean, whatever we see in other people, what we hate in other people, I mean, is within ourselves. Yeah? And that is so difficult. I mean, it's so difficult to admit. I mean, I just remember how... it took me hours, you know, to admit to some fault that I saw in somebody else. Because I wasn't that person. But, you know, then in the end, you know, I said, no, I don't let go now. Now I really want to know if I have this fault as well. And, you know, after a battle, you know, of a few hours, maybe it was 6 hours or 7 hours, or maybe it was even a day. I mean, I got to see. See? You've got it in you. Maybe not as strong as him, you know, but you've got it. So, I mean, you know, get rid of yourself, you know, and then, you know, when you see this kind of person, I mean, you just have metta for him. The moment you rip out the faults that you see in other people, in yourself, I mean, you just have metta for these people. Because you actually know, because you ripped it out yourself, you actually know what kind of dukkha they have. What kind of suffering they go through to do this. I mean, it's just the exam, you know. Some of the monks take some nice things, you know. You also want them, you know. But you accuse, how greedy they are, you know. You don't see the suffering. We don't see the suffering of these monks. They are in such a such a heat, you know, they can't be satisfied, you know, so they have to grab something nice, hold on and hold into it. Now I'm happy for a moment. You know? We can't see that because we only see the faults, you know. We cannot admit, you know, that we have the same tendencies. Of course we have the same tendencies. Huh? Just remember one thing. We are born into this world because of greed and hate. Huh? So every one of us, and no matter where you look, you know, be it the animals or be it the human beings, the other beings we don't see, are born because of greed and hate. So, I mean, seeing it like this, you know, it's quite easy to admit to it. Okay, I have greed and hate, yeah. I mean, I first get rid of my greed and hate, you know, and then see what's over. And you will see, you know, amazing. You know? I mean, once you rip it out of your own heart, I mean, you feel so sorry for these guys, how they act. Because, you know exactly what is behind it. But as long as you see, some opposition is coming up from the heart, I mean, you haven't overcome it yet. So, I mean, I went off the topic, you know, I was at the respect. I was respecting the teachers, respecting the parents, or respecting, you know, the religious teachers. I mean, if you cannot respect, I mean, when we are here, if you cannot respect the religious teacher or the spiritual teacher, I mean, how can we respect the Dhamma that he teaches? The Dhamma is beyond this world. I mean, we might not understand it. You know, the longer we practice, the more we understand the Dhamma. Huh? I mean, we have to give it some respect. Huh? Otherwise, we will not be able to practice it. The moment our self-view comes in, you know, that's not the right thing, that's not the right thing, that doesn't fit, you know. I'm cleverer than the Lord Buddha, you know. I mean, he was born 2,500 years ago. What does he know? I mean, he certainly understood, you know, the basic tactics of the Kilesas. And the basic tactics of the Kilesas have not changed within the last 2,500 years. The only thing that have changed over the last 2,500 years are the play toys of the Kilesas. They have different toys. Now they have their phone, you know, it's the utmost toy, you know, in the West. Everybody, you know, no matter sitting in the bus or not sitting in the train, I mean, he just messes, SMS, you know.
It's a tablet now.
It's a tablet, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, if it's a tablet. You're sitting in cafes, you know, we used to go to cafes to talk to each other. Now they're sitting in cafes, SMS to each other. The toys have changed, the Kilesas have not changed. So, I mean, this respect for the Buddha, for the Dhamma, for the Sangha. The Sangha means a group of holy people. And there are eight kinds of holy people. Or four kinds of holy people, you know, eight kinds of holy people. The first kind of holy people is one who enters the stream. And they are divided in two kinds, you know, one who enters the stream and one who gets the fruit of entering the stream. And the next is the Sakadagami, the one who returns only one time to the world. The Anagami, the one who does not return, and the Arahant. And they all have, you know, there are four kinds of person, but eight kinds of fruit. People who reap the fruits, that's why they're called eight kinds of person. These are the holy person, you know, and that is the community of the holy people. If you can't have enough respect in the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, I mean, the moment our respect fades, I mean, that's where our practice stops. I mean, there are people, you know, here in Thailand, probably Thailand is the most... It's the country with the most arahants in the whole world. It's the richest country in respect to the Buddhist religion. The adjacent countries like Burma and Laos and Khmer also do have arahants. But you know, the multitude and the teaching of Thailand is the richest country in this respect. There is no country that is richer than Thailand in the respect of the Buddhist teaching. And because why is it? I mean, in the West, of course, we have all the teachings of the Lord Buddha, but we don't have the examples of the teaching. We don't have these eight kind of people. We don't have the Sotapanna, we don't have the Sakadagami or Anagami or Arahant that are a product, that are the result of the teaching. That's why the Lord Buddha said, you know, the moment these eight kind of people stop, then the religion will deteriorate. I mean that the religion has only one point, has only one aim. It will guide us the way to the end of dukkha. It will guide us the way to nirvana. And as long as there are people who have gone the way and know the way for themselves, that is a sure sign that the religion lives. Otherwise, it just, you know, it's just in forms of books, you know. And when you understand dukkha, you know, some people just go to the first dukkha, you know. Then some people understand suffering, pain, and then other people hear, "No, I don't suffer." I mean, I didn't suffer, man. You know, it wasn't the reason that I suffered because that I entered the monkshood. I had dukkha, huh? I was dissatisfied, you know, with my life. That's the reason why I, you know, became a practitioner and in the end became a monk. Because I had dukkha, I was dissatisfied. Whatever I did, you know, I had the best job, you know, I still had dukkha. I had enough money, I still had dukkha. I mean, so these things weren't giving me any lasting satisfaction. And I thought there's something wrong with my life, you know, why is it only accumulating dukkha? I mean, and then somebody showed me the way to practice, you know, and then I for the first time I sat in samadhi and I said, "Oh, there's sukha. Sukha is just the opposite of dukkha. Oh, wow. You know, if that is like this, you know, I leave the world behind. Huh? Then I don't need this money, I don't need my job, I don't need my title and anything, you know. I just go for this, because that is something, you know." And that's why the Lord Buddha, you know, takes such emphasis on the experience of samadhi. But let's go back to the third, gratitude. I mean, I was just talking about respect. I'm getting pulled off all the time. Now let's talk about gratitude. Why is gratitude so important? I mean, gratitude, the things that we are finding in the heart, the metta that we're finding in the heart, the loving kindness that we find in the heart, or this joy that we find in the heart. I mean, how can we not be grateful for it? If something that nice is given to us, actually it's our own, but we have forgotten it. No? We have forgotten that we are the owner of happiness. No? We have forgotten it by looking always outside, not looking inside. So being grateful for the things that are given, I mean, it helps us enormously on the path of the practice. I mean, if we understand, you know, that all the things are a result of our karma, whatever, you know, whatever comes, if somebody brings us some nice tea, you know, that's fine, you know, it's a result of our karma. If somebody brings us just some water, yeah, it's also fine, you know, it's a result of our karma. So be grateful for what is given to you. Be happy with it, you know, and accept it. That's the way how we can accept our karma. So if somebody hits us, you know, then we should accept this karma and don't hit back. Well, what is a very difficult task, of course, for most of us who have not practiced well. So this gratitude, you know, in combination, you know, they all fit in together. They're all combined, you know. It's not actually, you know, all the one things, you know, all the one thing, this truth, you know, the absolute truth, you know. I mean, when we pull it out into this world, you know, can be described by different aspects, you know. And that is the aspects that the Lord Buddha used to teach the world. The four noble truths, you know, the truth of karma, you know, the truth of anicca, anatta, dukkha, you know, things being impermanent, things being not me, not mine, not myself, and dukkha, I mean, dukkha we have twice, you know. The characteristic of this world, you know. Anicca, anatta, dukkha, you know. Anicca, impermanence, anatta, it's not self, you know. And dukkha, being not satisfied. And then the Four Noble Truths, that starts with dukkha. I mean, see the importance of this dukkha. No? It's in the three characteristics. The Four Noble Truths start with it, you know. And then the end, you know, the Fourth Noble Truth, the end, that the path that leads to the end of dukkha. The path that leads to the deliverance, to freedom. To the freedom, not to the freedom of the body, but to the freedom of the heart, or to the freedom of the citta. So the better we understand, and that was my most concern, you know, in the last 3 days, you know, talking to the Thais, the better we understand this noble truth, the more energy we have to pull off, you know. I mean, it gives us, there's dukkha. Oh, I didn't see this, you know, so much dukkha. You know? And then, you know, suddenly we are overbeared by this dukkha that we haven't seen before, so that we want to get out. Oh, okay, let's make a go for it, you know. It's just, you know, it's fine as long as we stand, you know, it's the same thing, as long as we stand in the water, you know, and it doesn't get too high, you know, we don't mind it, you know. But when it comes to our lips, you know, so that, you know, with each breath, you know, we take some water, some salt water in us, you know, I mean, then we certainly make the way out. But most of the time we don't even look. People are standing, you know, under the water and don't look. I mean, they look up to the sky, you know, they never see the situation they are in. And that's why I place so much importance on this first noble truth. I mean, it's probably the same thing as the Lord Buddha, you know. He placed so much importance on dukkha. If we understand dukkha, I mean, we will be most willingly to face, you know, the hardships along the path, you know, to overcome this dukkha. So samadhi. And let's go. I was talking about the prerequisites before we can go. The ability, you know, to let go of material things. I mean, making bun, making, being generous, being generous with these things. The second thing, you know, having respect, you know, having this attitude, you know, this other person is also a human being. He's a human being, I'm a human being. He's born because of greed and hate, I'm born because of greed and hate. How can I be better? How can I not respect? What he does with his life is his problem. You know? What I do with my life is my problem. I mean, that makes, you know, that makes life much more easier, especially within a community. You know? I mean, there are always people, you know, we see, you know, and we don't like, and there are always people that we like. You know? But, you know, to have this aspect of, oh, this person is also born because of greed and hate, and I'm born because of greed and hate, so I'm not much better than him. I'm really not much better than him. I mean, I try to get rid of my greed and hate, you know, and then maybe then, you know, I can help him. But even the trying to help him, see, he, you know, makes us feel better. I mean, we really cannot help him as long as we are still stuck in this shithole. I mean, as long as you swim in this shithole, they have no ground under your feet, how can you help somebody out, Jens, huh? I mean, you swim, you know, the moment you push somebody up, you know, you dive in, no? And then you crawl up, okay, I can see now, oh, that is dukkha, you know, and then I see just a head coming up, you know, oh, I help him, you know, getting out of the dukkha, whoops, helping him out, you know, and we dive back in. I mean, you can help somebody out of dukkha if you have some fixed ground or ground under your feet, where you don't dive in again, and the first stage, you know, where we have ground under our feet, is actually the stage of sotapanna, stream entry. It means we enter the stream, you know, and it takes us at most, you know, 7 lives, you know, until we enter the end of dukkha. It's a guarantee. The Lord Buddha guaranteed us, you know, And whatever the Lord Buddha said, you know, I mean, within my practice of over 20 years, you know, I couldn't find any fault with him. What he said, you know, was true, you know. And it's not only him he said this. It's not only him he proclaimed it. It's many, many Buddhas before him proclaimed the same noble truth, proclaimed the same teaching. The teaching of each Buddha doesn't differ. And he's not the first Buddha. I mean, I don't know what the counting is. I mean, I think he's the 24th. But on this world, he's the fourth Buddha. On this world, on the earth, he's the fourth Buddha, and there's one more Buddha coming on this earth. And then it's the end of the earth time. And there will be another planet. I mean, if we can't, you know, if we can't be born on this planet, we'll find another planet. So sila, the precepts, the five precepts. Not to harm any living being. Not to take what is given. Not given. The third precept, no sexual misconduct. Fourth precept, no lying. No speech that harms other people. No harsh speech. And especially for us, no criticism. I mean, that is for us very difficult. Not to criticize others. I mean, I could go into a very detailed explanation of the precepts. The more detailed it is, you know, the more subtle it is, I mean, the more it helps us on the way. But that is just for the common practitioner. And the fifth, no alcohol and no drugs. Everything that makes us unmindful. And now, when you look at it, the five precepts, just the five precepts, I mean, the Lord Buddha guarantees us if we can keep them, we don't go to the lower realms. What are the lower realms? The animal realms, the ghost realms, the demon realms, and the hell realms. Then there's the human realm that we are in. As long as we keep the five precepts, we will be born as human beings. That's okay. It's not too bad. But above us, there are about 30 realms of heaven. And now look at it. What I said, you know, who is going to be born in heaven? I mean, of course, he has to keep the five precepts. But also what applies to are the first three virtues that I said are prerequisite. A person who is stingy doesn't go to heaven. A person who doesn't have respect for others is not going to go into heaven. And a person who has no gratitude is not going to heaven. There are requirements also for heaven. There are requirements for our practice. I mean, all the heavenly beings, you know, are pretty good, you know, with samadhi. That's how they can stay so long there, you know? Because they have good samadhi. You know? A day, you know, in the heavenly world is 70 years on the basic. On our human level, something like that. Because of their samadhi, because of their sati. So without these three prerequisites, I mean, you can't even go to heaven. They don't want you there. I mean, you know, heaven is more rigid than our kingdoms, you know, used to be. In terms of respect. And in the enormous generosity, you know, that is needed. And the gratitude, you know, being grateful, you know, that you've been born into this situation, been born in this family, have been given this job, you know, or been given this house, you know, or the opportunity to stay, you know. Even if you go in a shop to buy it, you know, not everybody has to sell it to you. Not everybody has to rent the house to you or sell the house to you. Oh, you forget it. We always think it's our right. You know? That's where we go wrong. Oh, that's interesting. It's all right, that's where we go wrong. So, I mean, it's important, you know. It's not only important for the practice. I mean, the devas do practice, you know. They do have some good samadhi. Some of them, you know, are in the heavenly realms of, you know, metta. You know, I mean, they have extremely good samadhi. They're just, you know, just producing metta, you know, all their life. Or some in mudita, you know, joy with others, you know, or karuna, compassion, you know. And then the fourth realm is the kind of upekkha, you know, complete equanimity. I mean, you have to have high concentration for that, you know, to enter that kind of state, you know, and to live there for years, for hundreds of years, for thousands of years. So, that's the five precepts, you know, and for monk, of course, the 227 precepts. That is the first column. The second column is samadhi. It's the ability to concentrate on one point, no matter what we do. If you do Buddha, you know, then concentrate on the Buddha. If you do anapanasati, then concentrate on the tip of the nose, you know, and observe the breath going in, going out. Or if you combine Buddha with breathing in and Do with breathing out, it's fine. The moment we are concentrated, you know, no matter what we are doing, if we are sitting or walking, we are doing the same thing. From the moment we open our eyes, you know, to the moment we close our eyes and fall asleep, we are training Buddha or we are training Anapanasati. I mean, the task here in this monastery are so easy, so that we can get by without thinking. We can sweep without thinking, we can sweep with our Buddha, or we can sweep with Anapanasati. I mean, we can eat with Anapanasati or eat with Buddha. You know? But do they kill us lettuce? That's another question. No, that tastes good, you know. What is this? You know? That's the kilesas coming in, you know. If you do Buddha, 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 we would just register the taste. I mean, we know the taste is nice, or we know the taste is not nice. Huh? I mean, why do we need this Kilesa's broadcasting company telling us what it is, you know? It's just like in samadhi, they tell us, you know, now you're close to it, now you're close to it. You know? Actually, you're far off. Huh? They are commenters, you know? I mean, the Kilesa's are nothing, you know, they're commenting our life, you know, telling us what is going on in our life. Huh? We have not realized that. They're telling us, are you doing good, you know? Or you're not doing good? Your practice is going good. Your practice is not going good. I cannot do that. I cannot concentrate. And you fall for it. You believe them. Yes, dear Kilesas, I cannot concentrate. So why not give up the whole thing? Now that's the next thing they ask. Huh? But actually, you know, what is there? You know, it's just the breath coming in, breath going out. Or the Buddha on a Buddha. That's all what is happening. And the Kilesas tell you, oh, you can stay with the Buddha very nicely. Actually, while you're thinking this, you know, I mean, you don't stay with the Buddha. Hmm? Oh, how good is my concentration? Oh, I'm very well concentrated. I mean, you haven't even reached a stage of 50% of concentration. Once you reach the stage of 50% of concentration, you will notice, oh, I'm so unmindful. How could I be so unmindful all the time? Because then, I mean, the mindfulness is the basis, you know, unmindfulness is not the basis, you know, the mindfulness sees the unmindfulness. Huh? But before that, the unmindfulness, you know, sees the mindfulness. Oh, I'm so mindful. Huh? And that's where, you know, we switch. Also, 50% of concentration is needed for getting into upachara samadhi. So we keep on this, you know, we keep focused on it. And, you know, replace every thought, you know, or every feeling, or every memory, you know, just with Buddha. You know. And the effort is not, you know, to force the Buddha, or to force the breath. The effort that goes into our practice is to pull it back to the Buddha. That's, I mean, you know, you want to, you know, you have just half a thought, you know, or three quarters of a thought, and it seems interesting, and you notice, your sati comes up, and you notice there's a thought, and you want to pull it back, and it, no, I still want to think that out, you know, and you want to pull it back, no, I want to still think that out, it's so nice, you know. Right? You know that fight. Huh? And that, you know, and that is the effort that we put in our practice. Not to force the Buddha, you know. We can use it sometimes, but you know, then you get headache, you know, when you use it too long. Not to force the Buddha, not to force the Dhamma. I mean, to pull it back, that is difficult enough. That's where all our effort goes into when we do the samadhi practice. And the moment you know our thoughts stop, you know, I mean, all the worries are gone. I mean, we are entering the safe house. Everything is safe there. I mean, before we have been in the hail, you know, in the hailstorm of the kilesas, you know. I mean, we open the door of the glass house, you know, we go in. We still see the hail, but you know, it doesn't affect us because it doesn't hit us. It's so far away, it's so distant. I mean, the moment we open the door and get out of samadhi, of course the hail will hit us again. You know? The kilesas will hit us again. You can also describe it as being so distant, like just like the moon. You know, you're not interested. You know? Just like the moon is not interesting if some dogs are howling at night. At you know? Who does he care? You know? But the moment you know the moon is very close to the dogs, and you know see their mouths, you know, then he might be interested. That's frightening. So samadhi, upachara samadhi, is the place, you know, where we are concentrated. Where we are concentrated to the extent that our thoughts are stopping and our memories are stopping. And then it becomes, you know, I mean, we can enjoy it for a while, you know. There's as many different experiences of upachara samadhi as there are worlds in this universe, or there are existences in this universe, or there are personalities in the universe. For each person it will be different. Somebody enjoy, you know, will reap joy or pity, you know, the first time he goes into upachara samadhi, another just joy, you know, for another just peaceful, and for another just quiet. But it's always a pleasant feeling. And when we come out, you know, and that is the most important sign, you know, when we have been in upachara long enough, upachara samadhi long enough, it's a sign that we feel energized. Then we know, okay, I've been there. You know, just like taking a nap, you know, during the day. Okay. Now, then we can do the work. Then we could do the work of panya, of investigation. But then, you know, when we stay in this upachara samadhi, we still need to hold on to the breath or on the Buddha, if you want to go deeper. And you will notice the more, you know, the more you hold on to, the more calmer. I mean, you haven't noticed in the beginning, but you will see. I mean, the beginning stages of upachara samadhi are still very coarse, you know. I mean, after a while you dislike them. You say, it's still too noisy, you know, in here. Huh? And then you get quieter and quieter and quieter and calmer. You get deeper, you know. And then at that stage there's no thought at all. There are no images at all. I mean, it's just this special feeling of peacefulness or happiness or joy, you know, or then even quietude, just quietude. The mind is completely quiet, you know. I mean, and then in that time, you know, the noises, you know, the hearing or the feeling even of the body. I mean, the body shrinks, you know. I mean, in the end, you know, I mean, all what you feel from the body will be just the area around your nose if you do breath meditation. Or when you do Buddha, you know, it will just be the area around your heart. And the rest of the body is gone, you know. I mean, even if a mosquito comes, you don't bother. Because you don't feel that part of the body. But then you go on. You still go on, you know. When you do Anasati, you still go on with concentrating on the breath that has become extremely subtle. And you stay on and on. Until there is a knowledge coming up from the heart, at that time, you know, you are already that quiet in your mind that you know it's not thinking, it's just knowing. The knowingness comes up, now my breath stops. And that's where fear arises. Fear arises, when breath stops, I will die. And then we are out. So we actually have to go back, you know, to the beginning, going into upachara samadhi, going slowly down, you know, back to that point, you know, and tell ourselves when I fall asleep, I'm not afraid if I'm breathing or not breathing. I just be sure, you know, I wake up. How can we actually be sure that we wake up? Some people die in their sleep. Why are we not afraid when we go to sleep? I mean, you have to prepare yourself for this stage. And then when you see it, you know, when you see it, when the breath actually stops, just jump to that, that knows that the breath stops. And that's actually in the heart. And that's where you enter, Apana Samadhi. And Apana Samadhi is, I mean, the world ceases to exist. Really, completely. I mean, there's no body. They could chop up your body, you know, and you wouldn't even notice it. There's not the slightest hearing or feeling. There's nothing. Because one pointedness is just one point. And this point just knows. But it doesn't know any objects. And I mean, there is no better way to describe it because this world doesn't have, you know, one pointedness. It always has subject and object. That's why you can't describe it in other ways, you know. All what you know, sometimes all what you know is that I haven't slept. And what you feel, you know, when you come out, you know, wow. You feel like you put your two fingers into an AC outlet. Whoops, completely charged. I mean, when you use your power of concentration, you can look through anything. I mean, just, you know, it's just like a laser beam. You know? I mean, you have been completely charged. I mean, if you've been in Apana Samadhi for a while. Not just 5 minutes, you know, but for an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours. I mean, the longer you are in there, the more you are charged. And Apana Samadhi is also, you know, Lungta Mahabua describes it, it's a preview of Nibbana. And I guarantee each one of you, the first thought when you come out of Apana Samadhi is, how do I get in? How do I get back there? That's the first thought that you have. How do I get back there? It's so absolutely, I mean, it's such an absolutely experience. I mean, but it's very difficult to attain. If our mind is not completely calm all the time, I mean, we cannot attain it. The moment, you know, the moment we do this kind of practice and we just talk to another person for half an hour or for 10 minutes, I mean, we cannot reach Apana Samadhi. Because the mind has to become extremely subtle. For that to reach that kind of stage, you know, where the mind is, where the chitta is not going out anymore and wickling around, you know, and this process can take 3 hours, you know. The first time it doesn't take us, the first time, normally, you know, we just go in, you know, we feel, you know, it's automatic, you know, something drives us in, you know, and we are in. The second time, you know, it's where our difficulties start. I mean, for me, it was my concentration also, the concentration is going like, I mean, just like you have a magnifying lens, you know, and the rays of the sun are concentrating on one point, and I was just in this beam of getting into the one point, and I just, oh, that's interesting, just follow it, gone. And gone I was. After 1 hour, oh, where have I been? And that was beautiful. And of course, I wanted to get back, you know, but at that time it wasn't that difficult. But then later on, it became more difficult. So that is the power of samadhi. Now I talk just a little bit about developing your wisdom. I mean, in another talk, I will talk about the third column. Wisdom is the investigation. Developing wisdom is not developing knowledge. If you could get by knowledge, I mean, especially for the West, I mean, we would be all enlightened by now. We would be all, you know, delivered, you know, to freedom by now. Because we are good at gathering knowledge and processing knowledge. It's not knowledge. Wisdom is developed by the heart. Wisdom is teaching the heart to see, you know. Just like I talked about the First Noble Truth. The First Noble Truth, seeing this dukkha. That's teaching the heart. Ah, yes, that's dukkha. I didn't want to see it, you know, but now I see it. Ah, that's dukkha. I didn't want to see it, but now I see it. You know? That's, you know, and so we teach, you know, we teach the heart. Okay, that is the body. That is the skin of the body. How does it look, the skin of the body? How does it look, you know, that the teeth, you know, the moment they are pulled out of our mouth? How does our saliva taste, you know, when we let it open, you know, for a while? Things like that, investigating the body, investigating feelings, investigation. You know, just open the heart, you know. See, these are feelings, you know. Where's the difference between the feeling of love, you know, the feeling of hate, you know, the feeling of this and the feeling of that? But before that, we have to experience that feeling. I mean, we have to show the heart. That means we have to be able to accept that feeling. The feeling of anger, you know, that's not easy to accept. You know? So we have to accept it, you know, completely breathe it in. Show the heart. That is the feeling of anger. You know, another feeling, you know, another feeling, the feeling of loneliness comes in. Breathe in, you know, show the feeling of loneliness to the heart until the heart understands, you know. We cannot make the heart understand, there is no way. There's the only way that we can make the heart understand is by showing it, by accepting it and living through it, you know, from the start of the feeling till the end of the feeling until the heart really understands what is feeling. Because the heart does have to understand it, otherwise, because the heart is the only one that can let go things. I mean, we can let go things in our mind, you know. Like, you know, some people said, no, I just want to stop smoking, they can let it go. But still, you know, the feeling of wanting, you know, once in a while wanting a cigarette, you know, is still there, it's still lingering around. You know, and if they haven't cut it off, you know, I mean, it will still come back to them one time. You know, it's just the same with alcohol, you know, people who have been adjusted to alcohol, you know. I mean, they can stop it by their mind, you know. But the moment the heart sees the penalty of drinking alcohol or the penalty of smoking, you know, I mean, it stops instantly. The moment the heart sees that our hand is actually always in the fire, the dukkha, you know, but, you know, just like we don't see the noble truth of dukkha, we don't see that actually, you know, our heart is over hot amber. Our hand is over hot amber because we always direct our sight outside, outside, outside. The moment we see it there, oh, instantly withdrawn. That's a function of the heart. That's not the mind. Somebody else can tell you, you know, your hand is on fire. You say, yes, yes, it's on fire, and you pull off the other hand. Well, it doesn't matter, really. It's not on fire. But your hand is still burning, it's still burning. I mean, we have to see, you know, we have to have sati to see what is burning, to understand these feelings. And then, you know, to understand memory association. I mean, sanya and sankara and vinyana. That's a path of wisdom. Wisdom has to be developed in the heart by showing it. That's why I often say, I mean, if somebody wants to overcome hell, he has to swim through the fires of hell. There's no way that he can overcome hell, you know, by not tasting hell. We have to feel the feeling of anger, you know, I mean, in its hot-blown irony, without letting it out, with accepting it, you know, being able to overcome anger. The same with greed. We have to feel this hot blown, you know, greed, you know, to understand, you know, to make the heart understand this is something that is not desirable. I mean, everybody knows, you know, anger is not desirable, you know, and the heat of lust is not desirable. That's why we look always for a solution, you know, to get rid of it. When we have anger, we let it out on somebody, you know, when we have lust, you know, we let it out on somebody. To get rid of this burning fire in our heart. And not last but least, you know, I mean, everything arises, just like I said, you know, a while ago. I mean, our citta, you know, is the one who projects everything onto this world. So what we see is actually ourself, but we never realize it. What we wish for, you know, I mean, our longing when we sit in meditation and our longing is, you know, to have a nice feeling. I mean, we just have to look for the feeling because everything is born in the heart. I mean, all what we need to do is look in the heart and there we will find everything. Everything is there. It has been always there, you know. It's just our direction to go outside is that how it obstructed our view from going inside. I mean, the feeling, what is the feeling of loneliness? Huh? What is the feeling of connectedness? I mean, when we feel lonely, we are not connected to ourselves. The moment we are connected to ourselves, we don't feel lonely. The moment we enter, yeah, Jens, the moment we enter Upachara Samadhi, we never feel lonely. We completely feel connected with all things in this universe. I mean, it's just a separation. You understand the separation, you know, we separate ourselves out. We think, you know, I think Pierre is somebody else from me. And that's where I create this this problem, the main problem. Because I think he's another person. So I treat him bad or treat him good, you know. But actually I'm treating myself. If I treat him good, you know, I treat myself good. If I treat him bad, I treat myself bad. Because he's not different. But we see it, you know, because we are educated like this to see everything else, you know, is distant from us. So that's why we feel disconnected, you know, and feeling lonely. Actually, you know, we can reconnect everything within our heart, you know. I mean, and then we actually know what is going on within this world. I mean, we don't have to travel to these places to know what is going on. We can connect instantly with our mother or father, you know, our friends, you know, just to poops, yeah, okay, connected. Because they are part of us. We view ourselves as separate from the others. That's why we're disconnected or lonely, you know. Or melancholy, all these things, you know, just experience it. So, and with this, I end my talk, you know. Now, if you have questions, you're welcome to ask.